Meat House Man, read for you by Kirby Hayborn. In the Meat House. They came straight from the ore fields that first time, Traeger with the others, the older boys, the almost men who worked their corpses next to his. Cox was the oldest of the group, and he'd been around the most, and he said that Traeger had to come even if he didn't want to. Then one of the others laughed and said that Traeger wouldn't even know what to do. But Cox, the kind of leader, shoved him until he was quiet. And when payday came, Traeger trailed the rest to the meat house, scared but somehow eager, and he paid his money to a man downstairs and got a room key. He came into the dim room trembling, nervous. The others had gone to other rooms, had left him alone with her. No, it. Not her, but it, he reminded himself, and promptly forgot again. In a shabby gray cubicle with a single smoky light. He stank of sweat and sulfur, like all who walked the streets of Scracky, but there was no help for that. It would be better if he could bathe first, but the room did not have a bath. Just a sink. Double bed with sheets that looked dirty even in the dimness, a corpse. She lay there naked, staring at nothing, breathing shallow breaths. Her legs were spread, ready. Was she always that way? Traeger wondered. Or had the man before him arranged her like that? He didn't know. He knew how to do it. He did. He'd read the books Cox gave him, and there were films you could see, and all sorts of things. But he didn't know much of anything else, except maybe how to handle corpses. That he was good at. The youngest handler on Scracky, but he had to be. They had forced him into the handler's school when his mother died, and they made him learn. So that was the thing he did. This he had never done. But he knew how, yes, he did. It was his first time. He came to the bed slowly and sat to a chorus of creaking springs. He touched her and the flesh was warm. Of course. She was not a corpse. Not really, no. The body was alive enough. A heartbeat under the heavy white breasts. She breathed. Only the brain was gone. Ripped from her, replaced with a dead man's synthebrain. She was meat now, an extra body for a corpse handler to control, just like the crew he worked each day under sulfur skies. She was not a woman, so it did not matter that Traeger was just a boy, a jowly frog-faced boy who smelled of Scracky. Would not care. Could not care. Emboldened, aroused and hard, the boy stripped off his corpse handler's clothing and climbed in bed with the female meat. He was very excited. His hands shook as he stroked her, studied her. Her skin was very white, her hair dark and long, but even the boy could not call her pretty. Her face was too flat and wide, her mouth hung open, and her limbs were loose and sagging with fat. On her huge breasts, all around the fat dark nipples, the last customer had left tooth marks where he'd chewed her. Traeger touched the marks tentatively, traced them with a finger. Then, sheepish about his hesitations, he grabbed one breast, squeezed it hard, pinched the nipple until he imagined a real girl would squeal with pain. The corpse did not move. Still squeezing, he rolled over on her and took the other breast into his mouth. And the corpse responded. She thrust up at him, hard, and meaty arms wrapped around his pimpled back to pull him to her. Traeger groaned and reached down between her legs. She was hot, wet, excited. He trembled. How did they do that? Could she really get excited without a mind? Or did they have lubricating tubes stuck into her? Or what? Then he stopped caring. He fumbled, found his penis, put it into her, thrust. The corpse hooked her legs around him and thrust back. It felt good, real good, better than anything he'd ever done to himself, and in some obscure way he felt proud that she was so wet and excited. It only took a few strokes. He was too new, too young, too eager to last long. A few strokes was all he needed, but it was all she needed too. They came together, a red flush washing over her skin as she arched against him and shook soundlessly. Afterwards, she lay again like a corpse. Traeger was drained and satisfied, but he had more time left, and he was determined to get his money's worth. He explored her thoroughly, sticking his fingers everywhere they would go, touching her everywhere, rolling it over, looking at everything. The corpse moved like dead meat. He left her as he'd found her, lying face up on the bed with her legs apart. Meat house courtesy. The horizon was a wall of factories, all factories, vast belching factories that sent red shadows to flick against the sulfur dark skies. The boy saw, but hardly noticed. He was strapped in place high atop his auto mill, two stories up on a monster machine of corroding yellow-painted metal with savage teeth of diamond and duralloy, and his eyes were blurred with triple images. Clear and strong and hard he saw the control panel before him, the wheel, the fuel feed, the bright handle of the ore scoops, the banks of light that would tell of trouble in the refinery under his feet, the brake and emergency brake. But that was not all he saw. Dimly, faintly, there were echoes, overlaid images of two other control cabs, almost identical to his, where corpse hands moved clumsily over the instruments. Traeger moved those hands, slow and careful, while another part of his mind held his own hands, his real hands, very still. The corpse controller hummed thinly on his belt. On either side of him, the two other auto mills moved into flanking positions. The corpse hands squeezed the brakes. The machines rumbled to a halt. On the edge of the great sloping pit, they stood in a row, shabby, pitted juggernauts, ready to descend into the gloom. The pit was growing steadily larger. Each day, new layers of rock and ore were stripped away. Once, a mountain range had stood here, but Traeger did not remember that. The rest was easy. The auto mills were aligned now. To move the crew in unison was a cinch. Any decent handler could do that. It was only when you had to keep several corpses busy at several different tasks that things got tricky. But a good corpse handler could do that, too. 8 crews were not unknown to veterans. 8 bodies linked to a single corpse controller, moved by a single mind, and 8 synthabrains. The dead men were each tuned to one controller, and only one. The handler who wore that controller and thought corpse thoughts in its proximity field could move those dead men like secondary bodies, or like his own body, if he was good enough. Traeger checked his filter mask and earplugs quickly, then touched the fuel feed, engaged, flicked on the laser knives and the drills. His corpses echoed his moves, and pulses of light spit through the twilight of Scracky. Even through his plugs he could hear the awful whine as the ore scoops revved up and lowered. The rock-eating maw of an automill was even wider than the machine was tall. Rumbling and screeching, in perfect formation, Traeger and his corpse crew descended into the pit. Before they reached the factories on the far side of the plain, tons of metal would have been torn from the earth, melted and refined and processed, while the worthless rock was reduced to powder and blown out into the already unbreathable air. He would deliver finished steel at dusk, on the horizon. He was a good handler, Traeger thought as the auto mill started down, but the handler in the meat house, Now she must be an artist. He imagined her down in the cellar somewhere, watching each of her corpses through holos and psi circuits, humping them all to please her patrons. Was it just a fluke then that his fuck had been so perfect? Or was she always that good? But how to move a dozen corpses without even being near to them, to have them doing different things, to keep them all excited, to match the needs and rhythm of each customer so exactly? The air behind him was black and choked by rock dust. His ears were full of screams, and the far horizon was a glowering red wall beneath which yellow ants crawled and ate rock. But Traeger kept his heart on all across the plain as the automill shook beneath him. The corpses were company-owned. They stayed in the company Dead Man Depot. But Traeger had a room, a slice of the space that was his own in a steel and concrete warehouse with 1,000 other slices. He only knew a handful of his neighbors, but he knew all of them, too. They were corpse handlers. It was a world of silent, shadowed corridors and endless, closed doors. The lobby lounge, all air and plastic, was a dusty, deserted place where none of the tenants ever gathered. The evenings were long there, the nights eternal. Traeger had bought extra light panels for his particular cube, and when all of them were on, they burned so bright that his infrequent visitors blinked and complained about the glare. But always there came a time when he could read no more, and then he had to turn them out, and the darkness returned once more. His father, long gone and barely remembered, had left a wealth of books and tapes, and Traeger kept them still. The room was lined with them, and others stood in great piles against the foot of the bed and on either side of the bathroom door. Infrequently, he went on with Cox and the others to drink and joke and prowl for real women. He imitated them as best he could, but he always felt out of place. So most of his nights were spent at home, reading and listening to the music, remembering and thinking. That week, he thought long after he'd faded his light panels into black, and his thoughts were a frightened jumble. Payday was coming again, and Cox would be after him to return to the meat house. And yes, he wanted to. It had been good, exciting. For once, he had felt confident and virile. But it was so easy, cheap, dirty. There had to be more, didn't there? Love, whatever that was. It had to be better with a real woman. Had to. And he wouldn't find one of those in a meat house. He'd never found one outside either. But then he'd never really had the courage to try. But he had to try. Had to. Or what sort of life would he ever have? Beneath the covers he masturbated, hardly thinking of it, while he resolved not to return to the meat house. But a few days later, Cox laughed at him and he had to go along. Somehow he felt it would prove something. A different room this time, a different corpse, fat and black, with bright orange hair, less attractive than his first, if that was possible. But Traeger came to her ready and eager, and this time he lasted longer. Again, the performance was superb. Her rhythm matched his stroke for stroke. She came with him. She seemed to know exactly what he wanted. Other visits. 2 of them. 4. 6. He was a regular now at the meat house, along with the others, and he had stopped worrying about it. Cox and the others accepted him in a strange, half-hearted way, but his dislike of them had grown, if anything. He was better than they were, he thought. He could hold his own in a meat house. He could run his corpses and his automills as good as any of them, and he still thought and dreamed. In time, he'd leave them all behind. Leave Scracky. Be something. They would be meat house men as long as they would live. But Traeger knew he could do better. He believed. he would find love. He found none in the meat house, but the sex got better and better, though it was perfect to begin with. In bed with the corpses, Traeger was never dissatisfied. He did everything he'd ever read about, heard about, dreamt about. The corpses knew his needs before he did. When he needed it slow, they were slow. When he wanted to have it hard and quick and brutal, then they gave it to him that way, perfectly. He used every orifice they had. They always knew which one to present to him. His admiration of the meat house handler grew steadily for months, until it was almost worship. Perhaps somehow he could meet her, he thought at last. Still a boy, still hopelessly naive, he was sure he would love her. Then he would take her away from the meat house to a clean, corpseless world where they could be happy together. One day, in a moment of weakness, he told Cox and the others. Cox looked at him, shook his head, grinned. Somebody else snickered. Then they all began to laugh.
"What an ass you are, Traeger," Cox said at last. "There is no fucking handler. Don't tell me you never heard of a feedback circuit."
He explained it all, to laughter. Explained how each corpse was tuned to a controller built into its bed. Explained how each customer handled his own meat. Explained why non-handlers found meat house women dead and still. And the boy realized suddenly why the sex was always perfect. He was a better handler than even he had thought. That night, alone in his room, with all the lights burning white and hot, Traeger faced himself and turned away, sickened. He was good at his job. He was proud of that. But the rest... It was the meat house, he decided. There was a trap there in the meat house, a trap that could ruin him, destroy life and dream and hope. He would not go back. It was too easy. He would show Cox, show all of them. He could take the hard way, take the risks, feel the pain if he had to, and maybe the joy, maybe the love. He'd gone the other way too long. Traeger did not go back to the meat house. Feeling strong and decisive and superior, he went back to his room. There, as years passed, he read and dreamed and waited for life to begin. When I was 1 and 20, Josie was the first. She was beautiful, had always been beautiful, knew she was beautiful. All that had shaped her made her what she was. She was a free spirit. She was aggressive, confident, conquering. Like Traeger, she was only 20 when they met. But she had lived more than he had, and she seemed to have the answers. He loved her from the first. And Traeger? Traeger before Josie, but years beyond the meat house? He was taller now, broad and heavy with both muscle and fat, often moody, silent, and self-contained. He ran a full 5 crew in the ore fields, more than Cox, more than any of them. At night, he read books, sometimes in his room, sometimes in the lobby. He had long since forgotten that he went there to meet someone. Stable, solid, unemotional. That was Traeger. He touched no one, and no one touched him. Even the tortures had stopped, though the scars remained inside. Traeger hardly knew they were there. He never looked at them. He fit in well now, with his corpses. Yet, not completely. Inside, the dream. Something believed. Something hungered. Something yearned. It was strong enough to keep him away from the meat house, from the vegetable life the others had all chosen. And sometimes, on bleak, lonely nights, it would grow stronger still. Then Traeger would rise from his empty bed, dress,
and walk the corridors for hours with his hands shoved deep into his pockets while something twisted, clawed, and whimpered in his gut. Always, before his walks were over, he would resolve to do something, to change his life tomorrow. But when tomorrow came, the silent gray corridors were half forgotten, the demons had faded, and he had 6 roaring, shaking automills to drive across the pit. He would lose himself in routine, and it would be long months before the feelings came again. Then Josie. They met like this. It was a new field, rich and unmined, a vast expanse of broken rock and rubble that filled the plain. Low hills a few weeks ago, but the company's skimmers had leveled the area with systematic nuclear blast mining, and now the automills were moving in. Traeger's 5 crew had been one of the first, and the change had been exhilarating at first. The old pit had been just about worked out. Here there was a new terrain to contend with, boulders and jagged rock fragments, baseball-sized fists of stone that came shrieking at you on the dusty wind. It all seemed exciting, dangerous. Traeger, wearing a leather jacket and filter mask and goggles and earplugs, drove his 6 machines and 6 bodies with a fierce pride, reducing boulders to powder, clearing a path for the later machines, fighting his way yard by yard to get whatever ore he could. And one day, suddenly, one of the eye echoes suddenly caught his attention. A light flashed red on a corpse-driven automill. Traeger reached, with his hands, with his mind, with 5 sets of corpse hands. 6 machines stopped, but still another light went red. Then another, and another. Then the whole board. All 12. One of his automills was out. Cursing, he looked across the rock field towards the machine in question, used his corpse to give it a kick. The lights stayed red. He beamed out for a tech. By the time she got there, in a one-man skimmer that looked like a teardrop of pitted black metal, Traeger had unstrapped, climbed down the metal rings on the side of the automill, walked across the rocks to where the dead machine stopped. He was just starting to climb up when Josie arrived. They met at the foot of the yellow metal mountain, in the shadow of its treads. She was field-wise, he knew at once. She wore a handler's coverall, earplugs, heavy goggles, and her face was smeared with grease to prevent dust abrasions. But still, she was beautiful. Her hair was short, light brown, cut in a shag that was jumbled by the wind. Her eyes, when she lifted the goggles, were bright green. She took charge immediately. All business, she introduced herself, asked him a few questions, then opened a repair bay and crawled inside, into the guts of the drive and the ore smelt and the refinery. It didn't take her long, 10 minutes maybe, and she was back outside. "Don't go in there," she said, tossing her hair from in front of her goggles with a flick of her head. "You've got a damper failure. The nukes are running away." "Oh," said Traeger. His mind was hardly on the automill, but he had to make an impression, made to say something intelligent. "Is it going to blow up?" he asked. And as soon as he said it, he knew that that hadn't been intelligent at all. Of course it wasn't going to blow up. Runaway nuclear reactors didn't work that way. He knew that. But Josie seemed amused. She smiled. The first time he saw her distinctive flashing grin, and seemed to see him, Traeger, not just a corpse handler. "No," she said. "It will just melt itself down. Won't even get hot out here, since you've got shields built into the walls. Just don't go in there."
"All right."
Pause. What could he say now? "What do I do?" "Work the rest of your crew, I guess. This machine'll have to be scrapped. It should have been overhauled a long time ago. From the looks of it, there's been a lot of patching done in the past. Stupid. It breaks down, it breaks down, it breaks down, and they keep sending it out. Should realize that something is wrong. After that many failures, it's sheer self-delusion to think the thing's going to work right next time out.
I guess, Traeger said. Josie smiled at him again, sealed up the panel and started to turn.
Wait, he said. It came out before he could stop it, almost in spite of him.
Josie turned, cocked her head, looked at him questioningly. And Traeger drew a sudden strength from the steel and the stone and the wind. Under sulfur skies, his dreams seemed less impossible.
Maybe, he thought. Maybe.
I'm Greg Traeger. Will I see you again?
Josie grinned.
Sure. Come tonight.
She gave him the address. He climbed back into his automill after she had left, exulting in his six strong bodies, all fire and life, and he chewed up rock with something near to joy. The dark red glow in the distance looked almost like a sunrise. When he got to Josie's, he found four other people there, friends of hers. It was a party of sorts. Josie threw a lot of parties, and Traeger, from that night on, went to all of them. Josie talked to him, laughed with him, liked him. And suddenly his life was no longer the same. With Josie, he saw parts of Scracky he had never seen before, did things he had never done. He stood with her in the crowds that gathered on the streets at night, stood in the dusty wind and sickly yellow light between the windowless concrete buildings, stood and bet and cheered himself hoarse, while grease-stained mechs raced yellow rumbly tractor trucks up and down and up. He walked with her through the strangely silent and white and clean underground offices and sealed air-conditioned corridors where off-worlders and paper shufflers and company executives lived and worked. He prowled the rec malls with her, those huge low buildings so like a warehouse from the outside, but full of colored lights and game rooms and cafeterias and tape shops and endless bars where handlers made their rounds. He went with her to dormitory gyms, where they watched handlers less skillful than himself send their corpses against each other with clumsy fists. He sat with her and her friends, and they woke dark, quiet taverns with their talk and with their laughter. And once Traeger saw someone looking much like Cox staring at him from across the room, and he smiled and leaned a bit closer to Josie. He hardly noticed the other people, the crowds that Josie surrounded herself with. When they went out on one of her wild jaunts, six of them, or eight, or ten, Traeger would tell himself that he and Josie were going out, and that some others had come along with them. Once in a great while, things would work out so they were alone together, at her place or his. Then they would talk of distant worlds, of politics, of corpses and life on Scracky, of the books they both consumed, of sports or games or friends they had in common. They shared a good deal. Traeger talked a lot with Josie and never said a word. He loved her, of course. He suspected it the first month, and soon he was convinced of it. He loved her. This was the real thing, the thing he had been waiting for, and it had happened just as he knew it would. But with his love, agony. He could not tell her. A dozen times he tried. The words would never come. What if she did not love him back? His nights were still alone, in the small room with the white lights and the books and the pain. He was more alone than ever now. The piece of his routine, of his half-life with his corpses, was gone, stripped from him. By day, he rode the great auto mills, moved his corpses, smashed rock and melted ore, and in his head rehearsed the words he'd say to Josie, and dreamed of those that she'd speak back.
She was trapped too, he thought. She'd had men, of course, but she didn't love them. She loved him. But she couldn't tell him, any more than he could tell her. When he broke through, when he found the words and the courage, then everything would be all right. Each day he said that to himself, and dug swift and deep into the earth. But back home, the sureness faded. Then, with awful despair, he knew that he was kidding himself. He was a friend to her, nothing more, never would be more. Why did he lie to himself? He'd had hints enough. They had never been lovers, never would be. On the few times he'd worked up the courage to touch her, she would smile, move away on some pretext, so he was never quite sure that he was being rejected. But he got the idea, and in the dark it tore at him. He walked the corridors weakly now, sullen, desperate, wanting to talk to someone without knowing how. And all the old scars woke up to bleed again. Until the next day, when he would return to his machines and believe again. He must believe in himself. He knew that. He shouted it out loud. He must stop feeling sorry for himself. He must do something. He must tell Josie. He would. And she would love him, cried the day. And she would laugh, the nights replied. Traeger chased her for a year of pain and promise, the first year that he had ever lived. On that, the night fears and the day voice agreed. He was alive now. He would never return to the emptiness of his time before Josie. He would never go back to the meat house. That far, at least, he had come. He could change, and someday he would be strong enough to tell her. Josie and two friends dropped by his room that night, but the friends had to leave early. For an hour or so, they were alone, talking about nothing. Finally, she had to go. Traeger said he'd walk her home. He kept his arm around her down the long corridors, and he watched her face, watched the play of light and shadow on her cheeks as they walked from light to darkness. Josie, he started. He felt so fine, so good, so warm, and it came out. I love you. And she stopped, pulled away from him, stepped back. Her mouth opened just a little, and something flickered in her eyes. Oh, Greg, she said, softly, sadly. No, Greg, no, don't. And she shook her head. Trembling slightly, mouthing silent words, Traeger held out his hand. Josie did not take it. He touched her cheek, gently, and wordless, she spun away from him. Then, for the first time ever, Traeger shook, and the tears came. Josie took him to her room. There, sitting across from each other on the floor, never touching, they talked. Known it for a long time. Tried to discourage you, Greg, but I didn't just want to come right out, and I never wanted to hurt you. A good person. Don't worry. Knew it all along, that it would never. Lied to myself. Wanted to believe, even if it wasn't true. I'm sorry, Josie, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Afraid you would go back to what you were. Don't, Greg, promise me. Can't give up. Have to believe.
Why?
Stop believing, then you have nothing. Dead. You can do better. A good handler. Get off Scracky, find something. No life here. Someone. You will, just believe. Keep on believing.
You. Love you forever, Josie. Forever.
How can I find someone? Never anyone like you, never.
Special.
Oh, Greg. Lots of people. Just look. Open.
Laughter.
Open?
First time I ever talked to anyone.
Talk to me again if you have to. I can talk to you. Had enough lovers. Everyone wants to get to bed with me. Better just to be friends.
Friends. Laughter. Tears. Promises of someday. The fire had burned out long ago, and Stevens and the forester had retired, but Traeger and Donnelly still sat around the ashes on the edges of the clear zone. They talked softly, so as not to wake the others, yet their words hung long in the restless night air. The uncut forest, standing dark behind them, was dead still. The wildlife of Vendalia had all fled the noise that the fleet of buzz trucks made during the day.
A full 6 crew running buzz trucks. I know enough to know that's not easy, Donnelly was saying.
He was a pale, timid youth, likable but self-conscious about everything he did. Traeger heard echoes of himself in Donnelly's stiff words.
You'd do well in the arena.
Traeger nodded, thoughtful, his eyes on the ashes as he moved them with a stick. I came to Vendalia with that in mind. Went to the gladiatorial once, only once. That was enough to change my mind. I could take them, I guess, but the whole idea made me sick. Out here, well, the money doesn't even match what I was getting on Scracky, but the work is, well, clean. You know?
Sort of, said Donnelly.
Still, you know it isn't like they were real people out there in the arena. Only meat. All you can do is make the bodies as dead as the minds. That's the logical way to look at it.
Traeger chuckled. You're too logical, Don. You ought to feel more. Listen, next time you're in Gideon, go to the gladiatorials and take a look. It's ugly. Ugly. Corpses stumbling around with axes and swords and morning stars, hacking and hewing at each other. Butchery, that's all it is. And the audience, the way they cheer at each blow. And laugh. They laugh, Don.
No.
He shook his head sharply. No. Donnelly never abandoned an argument.
But why not? I don't understand, Greg. You'd be good at it, the best. I've seen the way you work your crew.
Traeger looked up, studied Donnelly briefly while the youth sat quietly, waiting. Josie's word came back. Open. Be open. The old Traeger, the Traeger who lived friendless and alone and closed inside a Scracky handler's dorm, was gone. He had grown, changed. There was a girl, he said slowly, with measured words, opening. Back on Scracky, Don, there was a girl I loved. It didn't work out. That's why I'm here, I guess. I'm looking for someone else, for something better. That's all part of it, you see? He stopped, paused, tried to think his words out. This girl, Josie, I wanted her to love me. You know. The words came hard. Admire me, all that stuff. Now, yeah, sure, I could do good running corpses in the arena. But Josie could never love someone who had a job like that. She's gone now, of course, but still. The kind of person I'm looking for, I couldn't find them as an arena corpse master. He stood up abruptly. I don't know. That's what's important, though, to me. Josie, somebody like her, someday. Soon, I hope. Donnelly sat quiet in the moonlight, chewing his lip, not looking at Traeger, his logic suddenly useless, while Traeger, his corridors long gone, walked off alone into the woods. They had a tight-knit group, 3 handlers, a forester, 13 corpses. Each day they drove the forest back, with Traeger in the forefront. Against the Vendalian wilderness, against the blackbriars and the hard gray iron spike trees and the bulbous rubbery snap limbs, against the tangled hostile forest, he would throw his 6 crew and their buzz trucks. Smaller than the automills he'd run on Scracky, fast and airborne, complex and demanding, those were buzz trucks. Traeger ran 6 of them with corpse hands, a 7th with his own. Before his screaming blades and laser knives, the wall of wilderness fell each day. Donnelly came behind him, pushing 3 of the mountain-sized rolling mills to turn the fallen trees into lumber for Gideon and other cities of Vendalia. Then Stevens, the 3rd handler, with a flame cannon to burn down stumps and melt rocks, and the soil pumps that would ready the fresh, clear land for farming. The forester was their foreman. The procedure was a science. Clean, hard, demanding work. Traeger thrived on it by day. He grew lean, almost athletic. The lines of his face tightened and tanned. He grew steadily browner under Vendalia's hot, bright sun. His corpses were almost part of him, so easily did he move them, fly their buzz trucks, as an ordinary man might move a hand, a foot. Sometimes his control grew so firm, the echoes so clear and strong, that Traeger felt he was not a handler working a crew at all, but rather a man with 7 bodies. 7 strong bodies that rode the sultry forest winds. He exulted in their sweat. And the evenings, after work ceased, they were good too. Traeger found a sort of peace there, a sense of belonging he had never known on Scracky. The Vendalian foresters, rotated back and forth from Gideon, were decent enough and friendly. Stevens was a hardy slab of a man who seldom stopped joking long enough to talk about anything serious. Traeger always found him amusing. And Donnelly, the self-conscious youth, the quiet, logical voice, he became a friend. He was a good listener, empathetic, compassionate, and the new, open Traeger was a good talker. Something close to envy shone in Donnelly's eyes when Traeger spoke of Josie and exercised his soul. And Traeger knew, or thought he knew, that Donnelly was himself, the old Traeger, the one before Josie, who could not find the words. In time, though, after days and weeks of talking, Donnelly found his words. Then Traeger listened and shared another's pain, and he felt good about it. He was helping. He was lending strength. He was needed. Each night around the ashes, the 2 men traded dreams and wove a hopeful tapestry of promises and lies. Yet still, the nights would come. Those were the worst times, as always. Those were the hours of Traeger's long, lonely walks. If Josie had given Traeger much, she had taken something, too. She had taken the curious deadness he had once had, the trick of not thinking, the pain blotter of his mind. On Scracky, he had walked the corridors infrequently. The forest knew him far more often. After the talking all had stopped, after Donnelly had gone to bed, that was when it would happen, when Josie would come to him in the loneliness of his tent. 1,000 nights he lay there with his hands hooked behind his head, staring at the plastic tent film while he relived the night he'd told her. 1,000 times he touched her cheek and saw her spin away. He would think of it and fight it and lose. Then, restless, he would rise and go outside. He would walk across the clear area into the silent, looming forest, brushing aside low branches and tripping on the underbrush. He would walk until he found water. Then he would sit down by a scum-choked lake or a gurgling stream that ran swift and oily in the moonlight. He would fling rocks into the water, hurl them hard and flat into the night to hear them when they splashed. He would sit for hours, throwing rocks and thinking, till finally he could convince himself the sun would rise. Gideon, the city, the heart of Vandalia, and through it of Slag and Scracky and New Pittsburgh and all the other corpse worlds, the harsh, ugly places where men would not work and corpses had to. Great towers of black and silver metal, floating aerial sculpture that flashed in the sunlight and shone softly at night. The vast, bustling spaceport where freighters rose and fell on invisible fire wands. Malls where the pavement was polished, iron spike wood that gleamed a gentle gray. Gideon. The city with the rot. The corpse city. The meat mart. For the freighters carried cargoes of men, criminals and derelicts, and troublemakers from a dozen worlds bought with hard Vandalian cash, and there were darker rumors of liners that had vanished mysteriously on routine tourist hops. And the soaring towers were hospitals and corpse yards, where men and women died and dead men were born to walk anew. And all along the iron spike boardwalks were corpse sellers' shops and meat houses. The meat houses of Vandalia were far famed. The corpses were guaranteed beautiful. Traeger sat across from one, on the other side of the wide gray avenue, under the umbrella of an outdoor cafe. He sipped a bittersweet wine, thought about how his leave had evaporated too quickly, and tried to keep his eyes from wandering across the street. The wine was warm on his tongue, and his eyes were very restless. Up and down the avenue, between him and the meat house, strangers moved. Dark-faced corpse handlers from Vandalia, Scracky, Slag. Pudgy merchants, gawking tourists from the clean worlds like Old Earth and Zephyr, and dozens of question marks whose names and occupations and errands Traeger would never know. Sitting there, drinking his wine and watching, Traeger felt utterly cut off. He could not touch these people, could not reach them. He didn't know how. It wasn't possible. It wouldn't work. He could rise and walk out into the street and grab one, and still they would not touch. The stranger would only pull free and run. All his leave like that, all of it. He'd run through all the bars of Gideon, forced 1,000 contacts, and nothing had clicked. His wine was gone. Traeger looked at the glass dully, turning it in his hands, blinking. Then, abruptly, he stood up and paid his bill. His hands trembled. It had been so many years, he thought as he started across the street. Josie, he thought, forgive me. Traeger returned to the wilderness camp, and his corpses flew their buzz trucks like men gone wild. But he was strangely silent around the campfire, and he did not talk to Donnelly at night. Until finally, hurt and puzzled, Donnelly followed him into the forest and found him by a languid, death-dark stream, sitting on the bank with a pile of throwing stones at his feet. Went in. After all I said, all I promised. Still, I went in. Nothing to worry. Remember what you told me. Keep on believing. Did believe. Did. No difficulties. Josie. You say I shouldn't give up. You better not. Repeat everything you told me, everything Josie told you. Everybody finds someone. If they keep looking, give up, dead. All you need, openness, courage to look. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Told me that 100 times. Fucking lot easier to tell you than do it myself. Greg, not a meat house man. A dreamer. Better than they are. Yeah. Hard, though. Why do I do this to myself? Rather be like you were? Not hurting, not living. Like me? No. No. You're right.
The Pilgrim, Up and Down. Her name was Laurel. She was nothing like Josie, save in one thing alone. Traeger loved her. Pretty? Traeger didn't think so, not at first. She was too tall, a half foot taller than he was, and she was a bit on the heavy side, and more than a bit on the awkward side. Her hair was her best feature. Her hair that was red-brown in winter and glowing blonde in summer, that fell long and straight down past her shoulders and did wild, beautiful things in the wind. But she was not beautiful, not the way Josie had been beautiful. Although, oddly, she grew more beautiful with time, and maybe that was because she was losing weight, and maybe that was because Traeger was falling in love with her and seeing her through kinder eyes, and maybe that was because he told her she was pretty, and the very telling made it so. Just as Laurel told him he was wise, and her belief gave him wisdom. Whatever the reason, Laurel was very beautiful indeed after he had known her for a time. She was 5 years younger than he, clean scrubbed and innocent, shy where Josie had been assertive. She was intelligent, romantic, a dreamer. She was wondrously fresh and eager. She was painfully insecure and full of hungry need. She was new to Gideon, fresh from the Vandalian outback, a student forester. Traeger, on leave again, was visiting the forestry college to say hello to a teacher who'd once worked with his crew. They met in the teacher's office. Traeger had 2 weeks free in a city of strangers and meat houses. Laurel was alone. He showed her the glittering decadence of Gideon, feeling smooth and sophisticated, and she was suitably impressed. 2 weeks went quickly. They came to the last night. Traeger, suddenly afraid, took her to the park by the river that ran through Gideon, and they sat together on the low stone wall by the water's edge, close, not touching. "Time runs too fast," he said. He had a stone in his hand. He flicked it out over the water, flat and hard. Thoughtfully, he watched it splash and sink. Then he looked at her. "I'm nervous," he said, laughing. "Laurel, I don't want to leave." Her face was unreadable. "Wary? The city's nice," she agreed. Traeger shook his head violently. "No, no, not the city, you. Laurel, I think I..." "Well..." Laurel smiled for him. Her eyes were bright, very happy. "I know," she said. Traeger could hardly believe it. He reached out, touched her cheek. She turned her head and kissed his hand. They smiled at each other. He flew back to the forest camp to quit. Don, you've got to meet her," he shouted. "See, you can do it. I did it. Just keep believing, keep trying. I feel so goddamn good, it's obscene." Donnelly, stiff and logical, smiled for him, at a loss as how to handle such a flood of happiness. "What will you do?" he asked, a little awkwardly. "The arena?" Traeger laughed. "Hardly. You know how I feel. But something like that. There's a theater near the spaceport, puts on a pantomime with corpse actors. I've got a job there. The pay is rotten, but I'll be near Laurel. That's all that matters." They hardly slept at night. Instead, they talked and cuddled and made love. The lovemaking was a joy, a game, a glorious discovery. Never as good technically as the meat house, but Traeger hardly cared. He taught her to be open. He told her every secret he had and wished he had more secrets. "Poor Josie," Laurel would often say at night, her body warm against his. "She doesn't know what she missed. I'm lucky. There couldn't be anyone else like you." "No," said Traeger. "I'm lucky." They would argue about it, laughing. Donnelly came to Gideon and joined the theater. Without Traeger, the forest work had been no fun, he said. The three of them spent a lot of time together, and Traeger glowed. He wanted to share his friends with Laurel, and he'd already mentioned Donnelly a lot. And he wanted Donnelly to see how happy he'd become, to see what belief could accomplish. I like her, Donnelly said, smiling the first night after Laurel had left.
Good, Traeger replied, nodding.
No, said Donnelly. Greg, I really like her.
They spent a lot of time together.
Greg, Laurel said one night in bed, I think that Don is, well, after me, you know?
Traeger rolled over and propped his head up on his elbow.
God, he said. He sounded concerned. I don't know how to handle it.
Carefully, Traeger said. He's very vulnerable. You're probably the first woman he's ever been interested in. Don't be too hard on him. He shouldn't have to go through the stuff I went through, you know? The sex was never as good as a meat house. And, after a while, Laurel began to close. More and more nights now she went to sleep after they made love. The days when they talked till dawn were gone. Perhaps they had nothing left to say. Traeger had noticed that she had a tendency to finish his stories for him. It was nearly impossible to come up with one he hadn't already told her.
He said that?
Traeger got out of bed, turned on a light, and sat down frowning. Laurel pulled the covers up to her chin.
Well, what did you say?
She hesitated.
I can't tell you. It's between Don and me. He said it wasn't fair, the way I turn around and tell you everything that goes on between us. And he's right.
Right, but I tell you everything. Don't you remember what we...
I know, but...
Traeger shook his head. His voice lost some of its anger.
What's going on, Laurel, huh? I'm scared all of a sudden. I love you, remember? How can everything change so fast?
Her face softened. She sat up and held out her arms, and the covers fell back from full, soft breasts.
Oh, Greg, she said, don't worry. I love you. I always will, but it's just that I love him too, I guess. You know?
Traeger, mollified, came into her arms and kissed her with fervor. Then, suddenly, he broke off. Hey, he said, with mock sternness to hide the trembling in his voice. Who do you love more?
You, of course. Always you.
Smiling, he returned to the kiss.
I know you know,
Donnelly said.
I guess we have to talk about it.
Traeger nodded. They were backstage in the theater. Three of his corpses walked up behind him and stood arms crossed like a guard. All right. He looked straight at Donnelly, and his face, smiling until the other's words, was suddenly stern. Laurel asked me to pretend I didn't know anything. She said you felt guilty, but pretending was quite a strain, Don. I guess it's time we got everything out in the open. Donnelly's pale blue eyes shifted to the floor, and he stuck his hands into his pockets.
I don't want to hurt you,
he said.
Then don't.
But I'm not going to pretend I'm dead either. I'm not. I love her too.
You're supposed to be my friend, Don.
Love someone else. You're just going to get yourself hurt this way.
I have more in common with her than you do.
Traeger just stared. Donnelly looked up at him, then, abashed, back down again.
I don't know. Oh, Greg, she loves you more anyway. She said so. I never should have expected anything else. I feel like I've stabbed you in the back. I...
Traeger watched him. Finally, he laughed softly.
Oh, shit, I can't take this. Look, Don, you haven't stabbed me. Come on, don't talk like that. I guess if you love her, this is the way it's got to be, you know? I just hope everything comes out all right.
Later that night, in bed with Laurel, I'm worried about him, he told her. His face, once tanned, now ashen.
Laurel? He said, not believing.
I don't love you anymore. I'm sorry, I don't. It seemed real at the time, but now it's almost like a dream. I don't even know if I ever loved you, really.
Dawn, he said woodenly.
Laurel flushed.
Don't say anything bad about Don. I'm tired of hearing you run him down. He never says anything except good about you.
Oh, Laurel, don't you remember? The things we said, the way we felt. I'm the same person you said those words to.
But I've grown, Laurel said, hard and tearless, tossing her red-gold hair. I remember perfectly well, but I just don't feel that way anymore.
Don't, he said. He reached for her. She stepped back.
Keep your hands off me. I told you, Greg, it's over. You have to leave now. Don is coming by.
It was worse than Josie. 1,000 times worse. Wanderings. He tried to keep on at the theater. He enjoyed the work. He had friends there. But it was impossible. Donnelly was there every day, smiling and being friendly, and sometimes Laurel came to meet him after the day's show, and they went off together, arm in arm. Traeger would stand and watch, try not to notice, while the twisted thing inside him shrieked and clawed. He quit. He would not see them again. He would keep his pride. The sky was bright with the lights of Gideon and full of laughter, but it was dark and quiet in the park. Traeger stood stiff against a tree, his eyes on the river, his hands folded tightly against his chest. He was a statue. He hardly seemed to breathe. Not even his eyes moved. Kneeling near the low wall, the corpse pounded until the stone was slick with blood and its hands were mangled clots of torn meat. The sounds of the blows were dull and wet, but for the infrequent scraping of bone against rock. They made him pay first, before he could even enter the booth. Then he sat there for an hour while they found her and punched through. Finally, though, finally. Josie.
Greg, she said, grinning her distinctive grin. I should have known. Who else would call all the way from Vandalia? How are you?
He told her. Her grin vanished.
Oh, Greg, she said. I'm sorry. But don't let it get to you. Keep going. The next one will work out better. They always do.
Her words didn't satisfy him. Josie, he said.
How are things back there? You miss me?
Oh, sure. Things are pretty good. It's still scracky, though. Stay where you are. You're better off. She looked off screen, then back.
I should go before your bill gets enormous. Glad you called, love.
Josie, Traeger started, but the screen was already dark. Sometimes at night he couldn't help himself. He would move to his home screen and ring Laurel. Invariably, her eyes would narrow when she saw who it was. Then she would hang up. And Traeger would sit in a dark room and recall how once the sound of his voice made her so very, very happy. The streets of Gideon are not the best places for lonely midnight walks. They are brightly lit, even in the darkest hours, and jammed with men and dead men. And there are meat houses all up and down the boulevards and the Iron Spike boardwalks. Josie's words had lost their power. In the meat houses, Traeger abandoned dreams and found cheap solace. The sensuous evenings with Laurel and the fumbling sex of his boyhood were things of yesterday. Traeger took his meat mates hard and quick, almost brutally, fucked them with a wordless savage power to the inevitable perfect orgasm. Sometimes, remembering the theater, he would have them act out short erotic playlets to get him in the mood. In the night, agony. He was in the corridors again. The low, dim corridors of the corpse handler's dorm on Scracky. But now the corridors were twisted and tortuous, and Traeger had long since lost his way. The air was thick with a rotting gray haze and growing thicker. Soon, he feared, he would be all but blind. Around and around he walked, up and down, but always there was more corridor, and all of them led nowhere. The doors were grim, black rectangles, knobless, locked to him forever. He passed them by without thinking, most of them. Once or twice, though, he paused, before doors where light leaked around the frame. He would listen, and inside there were sounds, and then he would begin to knock wildly, but no one ever answered. So he would move on, through the haze that got darker and thicker and seemed to burn his skin, past door after door after door, until he was weeping and his feet were tired and bloody. And then, off a ways, down a long corridor that loomed straight before him, he would see an open door. From it came light so hot and white it hurt the eyes, and music bright and joyful, and the sounds of people laughing. Then Traeger would run, though his feet were raw bundles of pain, and his lungs burned with the haze he was breathing. He would run and run until he reached the room with the open door. Only when he got there, it was his room, and it was empty. Once, in the middle of their brief time together, they'd gone out into the wilderness and made love under the stars. Afterwards, she had snuggled hard against him, and he stroked her gently. "What are you thinking?" he asked. "About us," Laurel said. She shivered. The wind was brisk and cold. "Sometimes I get scared, Greg. I'm so afraid something will happen to us, something that will ruin it. I don't ever want you to leave me."
"Don't worry," he told her.
"I won't."
Now, each night before sleep came, he tortured himself with her words. The good memories left him with ashes and tears, the bad ones with a wordless rage. He slept with a ghost beside him, a supernaturally beautiful ghost, the husk of a dead dream. He woke to her each morning. He hated them. He hated himself for hating. Duvalier's dream. Her name does not matter. Her looks are not important. All that counts is that she was, that Traeger tried again, that he forced himself on and made himself believe and didn't give up. He tried. But something was missing. Magic? The words were the same. "How many times can you speak them?" Traeger wondered. "Speak them and believe them like you believed them the first time you said them. Once? Twice? 3 times maybe? Or 100? And the people who say it 100 times, are they really so much better at loving? Or only at fooling themselves? Aren't they really people who long ago abandoned the dream, who use its name for something else?" He said the words, holding her, cradling her and kissing her. He said the words with a knowledge that was surer and heavier and more dead than any belief, He said the words and tried, but no longer could he mean them. And she said the words back, and Traeger realized that they meant nothing to him. Over and over again, they said the things each wanted to hear, and both of them knew they were pretending. They tried hard, but when he reached out, like an actor caught in his role, doomed to play out the same part over and over again, when he reached out his hand and touched her cheek, the skin was smooth and soft and lovely, and wet with tears. Echoes.
I don't want to hurt you, said Donnelly, shuffling and looking guilty, until Traeger felt ashamed for having hurt a friend.
He touched her cheek, and she spun away from him.
I never wanted to hurt you,
Josie said, and Traeger was sad. She had given him so much, he'd only made her guilty. Yes, he was hurt, but a stronger man would never have let her know. He touched her cheek, and she kissed his hand.
I'm sorry, I don't, Laurel said, and Traeger was lost.
What had he done? Where was his fault? How had he ruined it? She had been so sure. They had had so much. He touched her cheek, and she wept. How many times can you speak them? His voice echoed. Speak them and believe them, like you believed them the first time you said them. The wind was dark and dust heavy. The sky throbbed painfully with flickering scarlet flame. In the pit, in the darkness, stood a young woman with goggles and a filter mask and short brown hair and answers. It breaks down, it breaks down, it breaks down, and they keep sending it out, she said. Should realize that something is wrong. After that many failures, it's sheer self-delusion to think the thing's going to work right next time out. The enemy corpse is huge and black, its torso rippling with muscle, a product of months of exercise, the biggest thing that Traeger has ever faced. It advances across the sawdust in a slow, clumsy crouch, holding the gleaming broadsword in one hand. Traeger watches it come from his chair atop one end of the fighting arena. The other corpse master is careful, cautious. His own dead man, a wiry blonde, stands and waits, a morning star trailing down in the blood-soaked arena dust. Traeger will move him fast enough and well enough when the time is right. The enemy knows it, and the crowd. The black corpse suddenly lifts its broadsword and scrambles forward in a run, hoping to use reach and speed to get its kill. But Traeger's corpse is no longer there when the enemy's measured blow cuts the air where he had been. Sitting comfortably above the fighting pit, down in the arena, his feet grimy with blood and sawdust, Traeger, the corpse, snaps the command, swings the Morning Star, and the great studded ball drifts up and around, almost lazily, almost gracefully, into the back of the enemy's head as he tries to recover in turn. A flower of blood and brain blooms swift and sudden, and the crowd cheers. Traeger walks his corpse from the arena, then stands to receive applause. It is his 10th kill. Soon the championship will be his. He is building such a record that they can no longer deny him a match. She is beautiful, his lady, his love. Her hair is short and blonde, her body very slim, graceful, almost athletic, with trim legs and small, hard breasts. Her eyes are bright green, and they always welcome him. And there is a strange erotic innocence in her smile. She waits for him in bed, waits for his return from the arena, waits for him eager and playful and loving. When he enters, she is sitting up, smiling for him, the covers bunched around her waist. From the door, he admires her nipples. Aware of his eyes, shy, she covers her breasts and blushes. Traeger knows it is all false modesty, all playing. He moves to the bedside, sits, reaches out to stroke her cheek. Her skin is very soft. She nuzzles against his hand as it brushes her. Then Traeger draws her hands aside, plants one gentle kiss on each breast, and a not-so-gentle kiss on her mouth. She kisses back with ardor. Their tongues dance. They make love, he and she, slow and sensuous, locked together in a loving embrace that goes on and on. Two bodies move flawlessly in perfect rhythm, each knowing the other's needs. Traeger thrusts, and his other body meets the thrusts. He reaches, and her hand is there. They come together, always, always, both orgasms triggered by the handler's brain, and a bright red flush burns on her breasts and earlobes. They kiss. Afterwards, he talks to her, his love, his lady. You should always talk afterwards. He learned that long ago. You're lucky, he tells her sometimes, and she snuggles up to him and plants tiny kisses all across his chest. Very lucky. They lie to you out there, love. They teach you a silly, shining dream, and they tell you to believe and chase it, and they tell you that for you, for everyone, there is someone. But it's all wrong. The universe isn't fair. It never has been, so why do they tell you so? You run after the phantom and lose, and they tell you next time, but it's all rot, all empty rot. Nobody ever finds the dream at all. They just kid themselves, trick themselves so they can go on believing. It's just a clutching lie that desperate people tell each other, hoping to convince themselves. But then he can't talk anymore, for her kisses have gone lower and lower, and now she takes him in her mouth, and Traeger smiles at his love and gently strokes her hair. Of all the bright, cruel lies they tell you, the cruelest is the one called love.